Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're going to take a look at home renovation and repair issues today with John Viner of Building Services and Consultant of Mount Horeb, Wisconsin, and Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. It's a full-service residential remodeling company and specializes a bit in sustainable design and historic renovations. So we're really pleased to have these guys back. And certainly if you have an issue with your home, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, the number is 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. John Viner, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry.
Chad Spate, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you. Great to be here.
You guys are busy, I assume. Chad, you're...
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
This is crunch time.
Yeah, this is the sort of the busy season, I guess, for Wisconsin anyway. And John, you're just as busy.
Yep, absolutely. We're still providing four or five home performance evaluations a week. Still squeezing out a few ice dam problems, solving a few of those here still from last winter. Besides, of course, trying to cut down on that energy use as these costs are at record levels.
Yeah, and it looks like we were talking before the show that even electric heat is becoming competitive with certain types of fuel.
Yeah, so in the rural areas where we're heating with propane or fuel oil, those costs are connected directly to a barrel of oil. So as we know, as that rises, those fuels are increasing, and electric heat in some places can actually be cheaper than propane at the moment.
Yeah, it's probably not likely to change anytime soon either. Well, I tell you what, Diana in Jamestown, Tennessee is on board with a question. Hi, Diana. Thanks for calling.
Well, I'm just traveling through on the way to St. Paul, and I'd heard this, and I've been trying to build, planning to build a house, and I want to know how easy is it to put, the solar hot water heater, green things, in.
Mm-hmm. And this is to build you've got a lot, or you're going to get a lot, and you're going to build a new
one. I have a lot, yes.
And you're going to build a house on that?
About 1,300 square feet.
All right.
And
one living level and then basement.
Is that home then located in Tennessee then? Or
yes, it will be.
Will be located. Okay, yeah. It's not difficult to install a solar hot water or a solar electric system, and especially incorporating it into the construction process, it even gets easier. So we may.
But you can do a whole system.
We can do a whole system to compensate majority of your hot water needs. Sometimes solar hot water systems are sized to produce about 70% of your total hot water needs. Solar electric systems, of course, it's all a matter of cost. Installation's not a problem. Water heating certainly is very viable and economically viable. Solar electric systems certainly are a great way to compensate your electric use.
I agree I have to find someone in the area, but I just wondered what these possibilities are.
Yeah.
So they really are there.
Oh, yeah. Especially with a new construction, I would think.
Yeah.
See, that was the thing. I thought, let's do it while we're building, not think about it later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Connect with an Energy Star consultant in Tennessee. I'm sure there's the ResNet.org is national association that qualifies and certifies individuals to do Energy Star consulting. So it's an Energy Star is a federal program that you can look up, and there'll be individuals there to really help you out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thanks.
Yep, thanks a lot. Chad, you were going to add something.
Yeah, well, I was just going to chime in. One of the things, Diana, that you've got to think about is if you've got a well-shaded lot, or if you're planning to build your house under the shadow of some trees, that will limit what you can do with a solar system, of course. But there are options for putting things out into the yard or on a secondary building. But that just requires planning. Obviously, there are good reasons without solar systems to have a well-shaded home. Typically, we like to have some good wind cover from the west and north sides and good solar shading on the south and west. But when you start to plan for solar systems to actually capture that sun's heat, then that changes the whole equation.
Some things to think about, and just actually how you position the house on the lot.
Correct.
That's very important. If I'm not mistaken, it can make a huge difference.
And it's important to build in those passive solar elements to the design of a home when you're planning a new home. It's much better to utilize proper placement in the lot and passive solar technologies, which are going to just allow the home by design to capture heat, to ventilate well, all the things that we need a home to be able to do, you want to design into it. And those systems are at very little cost, if any. It's just good design, basically, whereas the actual solar hot water and photovoltaic systems are quite a large investment.
Thanks very much for calling, Diane. I appreciate your call. And let's hear from Tom next in Windsor. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, gentlemen. Hey, the other week I was watching the Weather Channel, and they were talking about hurricane preparedness, and they were talking about being able to strengthen your roof by using some liquid adhesive. You run it along the underside of the decking by along the trusses or whatever they're called, those 2x6s or whatever that connect to the decking. And I was wondering, if one was to do that, would it help protect your home against tornadoes?
Probably not.
Well, yeah, I'm not real sure what they're talking about there. Certainly the use of, we call them hurricane ties. They are required by code really pretty much all over the country, but in Wisconsin.
This wasn't hurricane ties.
Right.
There was,
no,
something you could add on. Mm-hmm. It you pumped it in like a caulk right along the where the two pieces of wood meet. I want to say it's like a liquid nail, that sort of thing.
Right. Well, it probably is some sort of adhesive. And the one thing I'll say is that a tornado is really not something that a wood-framed structure is going to typically withstand. I mean, it's a concrete home that will sustain a tornado typically, but not a wood-framed home. The forces of a tornado are far greater and more localized than a hurricane, which, you know, we do occasionally get some very strong winds in Wisconsin, some straight-line winds that can cause damage comparable to that of a hurricane if you're unfortunate enough to be in the path. But a tornado is an entirely different thing. I will say that there's some blocking that can be installed in an older home that will help shore up the structure in the event that you are close to a tornado, though not necessarily directly in its path. Because what will often happen is that older homes are often not directly attached to the foundation. And so what will happen is that when a tornado passes by, they actually get ripped and racked right off of the foundation. So there's some things that can be done to install blocking up tight to the cement or to whatever your foundation is to help secure it all together, and then whatever strapping or bracketing can be done, that's going to be useful.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Harry in Appleton, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Harry.
Hi. I have a two-story 1970s-era home, wood frame home with only 2x4 exterior walls, so not much insulation, single-pane windows with storms. Have a high-efficiency gas furnace, and here about 3-4 years ago, I put in a pellet stove, and I've been using that as my primary heat. The gas furnace only kicks in when the pellet stove can't maintain set point. Last year, my gas furnace ran less than 200 hours. I was wondering a couple things. One, what might I do to, under that circumstance, to better insulate my home? And two, what your guests think the effect of the rise in petroleum and natural gas prices will be on wood pellets.
What was the year of the home again, Harry?
1970.
Okay. So they're at that point, if you haven't insulated the attic yet or hasn't been increased since construction, it's...
Yeah, the attic's good. I got close to 2 feet of blow in.
Okay. Okay. So that, and have you had the walls opened up? 70s house, often we do find a 3-inch bat and a fiberglass bat in those wall cavities at that time.
That's all that's in there, right?
Yep.
And the other thing that they did is they put the supply ducting in the exterior walls, and so of course in those cases there's no insulation at all because the chase completely is filled by the duct.
Yeah, so that's unfortunate. Do you plan on re-siding anytime soon, or?
Well, I'm not sure the cost benefit of that would be, because you're probably looking at $15,000 to $20,000 to do that, and I don't know that the return is worth it.
So the best thing is understanding the house tightness. The insulation levels are fine, but are they hiding the insulation in that attic, covering up some of the holes that where we can button up the home to an extent where we can get energy savings, increase comfort? Now, did your roof hold a lot of snow this winter, or did you have some ice damage?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a pretty good sign if you don't have a lot of ice buildup this last winter, and we kept that 8 to 12 inches of snow on your roof for several months of the time, like my home did. Then
it just melted on the north side yesterday. No.
Well, I'm going to have to come take a look at your house. So the air tightness, sounds like you're doing pretty good, and if it's to save money or save energy, you're doing that with the pellet stove. Is the pellet stove simply a room heater then, or is it a centralized system?
Well, it's simply a room heater, but I have it in it's essentially carrying probably 90% of the load. I mean, unless it gets down to 5 or 10 degrees, my pellet stove pretty much keeps the whole house at 68 because it's kind of open.
Okay, great. Yeah, I know the pellets are still... last time I looked was several months ago. It's still competitive with natural gas, a little bit lower cost than natural gas. And I think that's an excellent way to subsidize your fossil fuel consumption. I'm curious, I'm an advocate of pellet stoves, but in your use of it, have you come across any disadvantages? Anything that hasn't worked out well for you?
I guess the worst thing is having a place to store the pellets.
Okay. That's good. Sometimes there's a little energy consumption there, noise consumption, people hassle bringing it in and out, but certainly I think that's an excellent way to go, so I commend you in your choice there.
All right. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Talking home renovation and repair today with John Viner and Chad Spade. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation and repair issues with John Viner of Building Services Consultant of Mount Horeb, Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. Really pleased to have these guys with us and glad to have you listening in. And Josh in Janesville is up next, so let's go to Josh. Hi, Josh.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I was checking out this trailer, $5,000. I was thinking about remodeling it. I got a bunch of friends that do construction, but the issue is it's a late 70s model. And it's got the aluminum, like, vertical siding. I was wondering, what are my options to changing that out to something more modern?
Siding. Okay, so it's a mobile home.
Yes, it's got the rubber roof, flat top, you know.
Okay.
Well I'm a big advocate for the fiber cement siding. I think that's a great way to go if you're wanting to update it, and you can still do that in a panelized form. So depending on what exactly you want it to look like, I'm not too familiar with the mobile home dimensions, but I'm going to guess that the side of them is not any higher than, say, 9 feet or maybe even 8 feet.
So we're working with 2x2s likely as the framing of that side walls. Often those old mobile homes are. So the structure-wise and holding the weight, I don't know, and maybe Chad will have something to say about that.
Yeah, well, you would have some concerns there. Plus, there's the opportunity whenever you reside a heated structure, you want to think about adding some foam board insulation to really improve the overall efficiency of the structure.
That's something I'm going to
do. Well, that would be a great opportunity. And down in Janesville, I mean, if you can give up the extra space, and again, I'm not, you know, when we're talking about a mobile home, there are other issues that come into play. But I would think that if you can add that inch and a half of foam and then a furring strip and attach the siding to it, you know, if you can add 5 inches of total width to the structure, I would certainly consider that. We recommend adding the 1.5 to 2 inches of foam if the budget allows for it, just to push the dew point out to the exterior of the structure and provide that additional comfort.
Mm-hmm. From an energy efficiency standpoint, often those ducts are all laid underneath that mobile home. So we someone take a look at the heating system, actually the duct ceiling. A lot of that heat escapes underneath that mobile home and is a big sore spot from an energy use, so something to look closer and investigate.
Well, good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Doug in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Doug.
Hi. I heard you guys talking earlier about the solar systems and whatnot, and that got me into thinking about a little conundrum I had a while back when I was looking at these, and that had to do with the grid intertie systems. A lot of them I see are typically for very small systems, you know, just a few kilowatts. I haven't really seen anything for anything larger, say 20, 100, whatever kilowatts. And also, they also seem to be converters, meaning they're taking a DC source, and I am interested in tying in a source that's already AC. I was wondering if your guests had any knowledge about those or where I could find something and how much these interties would cost.
Yeah, so often those solar electric systems, they can a number of common systems I'm seeing is little over 3 kilowatt systems, 3,000 watt systems, and that's pretty common, 2 to 3. We want to get our electrical consumption somewhere near there. I mean, if we're running 10,000 kWh per year, that's a bunch, and we need to reduce that load as we invest into a solar electric system, so that we wouldn't have to put a 20 or 100 kilowatt system on our home. That's more of a commercial industrial application, larger than a residential building is going to be.
Sure, but I mean, I'm also looking to my power consumption is very low, but I'm looking to sell some of that electricity back to utility.
Mm-hmm. Certainly those systems
in the first place.
Okay. They certainly can be installed. It's all a matter of cost. There's certainly excellent installers throughout the state that can provide that system and design and installation for you. That's not a problem. It's a matter of space for the panels, the inverters in a utility room. Incorporating there are AC panels that invert DC to AC right at the panel. I know they've been around. I don't think that they have a strong presence in the marketplace, but I think that you can still find them rather than the typical solar electric system is DC, as you mentioned. We charge a battery. We take that battery power and invert it to utility-grade AC power. So those AC panels do exist.
All right. All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Larry in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Larry.
Hi. I have a couple questions. One is on the window sash kits, and the other is on cellulose insulation. On the window sash kits, my house was built in the 70s, has vinyl-clad windows, which are in excellent shape, and with the storms on and a single pane. And I'm thinking of putting sash kits in instead of the replacement windows. And I'm wondering what you think of those.
What do you think, Chad?
Well, you've got a few options with replacing just the sashes, because there are a number of manufacturers now that make a pocket window that will actually slide a new jamb into the sash opening. And what that gives you, though, if your home was built in the 70s, chances are the window openings are fairly square. You know, they're still true and plumb and all that. But if there's a lot of adjustment needed, having a pocket jamb that goes inside of that old jamb allows you to properly square the unit and get the good seal that you need on the entire perimeter to have a better performing window, which is the whole point of replacing your windows. You do have to be concerned about the old-fashioned sash kit, which has just a liner that gets attached on either side. Those are entirely dependent on friction for the seal. And because of that, the liner tends to get stuck a little bit out of being in its, you know, it essentially will allow for larger gaps than what we would typically want. And so you have to kind of tweak it, and that requires a fairly attentive homeowner that's going to get higher performance out of that. Another issue that you've got to be concerned about when you're adding a thermopane window in an opening where you've got an old storm is that you're likely to start to see more condensation on that outside storm window than what you may be used to seeing. And the reason for that is when you put in the thermopane and you put in a higher performing window, the air outside that's still within the storm is going to start to be colder. So the storm window itself is going to start to be colder because you're putting in a primary window that's better insulated. And when the warm air escapes in the wintertime, as some of it will undoubtedly, it will hit that now much colder storm window, and it will condense on it. And so some of your options for replacing will have one large screen, and you'll remove the storm. Now, the upshot is that an old single-pane double-hung window with a storm might perform with a pretty close R value or U value to that upgraded window. So you have to be careful about what you're trying to accomplish and why you're changing it. Generally, there's a 20 to 30 year payback on window replacements when you compare energy savings to the cost of replacing the units. The things that you get other than energy savings, of course, are easier operating, newer finishes, maybe quieter, you know, more sound barrier between the outside and the inside. So there are good reasons to upgrade windows, but there's some pitfalls too.
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah. The second question I got is on cellulose insulation. I added that to my ceiling. I have a ranch house. Starting in the 70s and into the 80s, I kept adding, and I ended up with about 2 feet. And it cut my energy bill in half. But now I've noticed that I'm using more fuel oil, and I've been in the attic, and the insulation has settled. Is that why? And I've even upgraded my furnace, and it didn't seem to make any difference.
Well, if you truly did have 2 feet, 24 inches, and it's settled some, down to 18 inches, for example, that's still quite a bit of insulation up in that attic. That's still adequate, as long as we haven't had those darn electricians and plumbers running around up there trashing it. But, or me, you know, sometimes we get up there.
No one's been up there.
Okay,
no.
So then
maybe
that's...
Maybe it's the windows.
So we don't... I wouldn't worry so much about the cellulose insulation in your attic. If literally you can go up there and there's a good 18, 14 inches, we're not going to add more at this point. The increased energy consumption, now that's different than, the dollar use, right? So, but you're saying the gallons have gone up of your fuel oil, which certainly is a concern as the prices are what they are today. And the difference, I can't diagnose that from here. I don't know what it might be.
Might be those windows.
Maybe they've become a little leakier.
I would really recommend that you consider contacting a home performance consultant, which I'm, of course, giving a plug for John's side of the of the pie here. But that, I mean, that's the best way to really find out what's going on and where you can best invest your dollars to bring down your energy bills and improve your comfort.
Yeah.
Going back to the windows, I had a friend of mine that did the full replacement vinyl window with the E value, and what he ended up telling me was that the windows are much noisier, and he thinks it's the vinyl frame that with a hollow inside, you know, the tubing, that is causing that.
Well, I'm not a big fan of vinyl windows, and I didn't say that earlier, but, you know, I would say that while vinyl has its uses, and certainly if you're in a wet room or you're down below grade, vinyl's a great way to go because all the moisture that it's going to be susceptible to will not adversely affect it. But when you're up above ground and you have a home that has proper moisture control and proper waterproofing on the outside, I recommend still a traditional wood window, ideally with a fiberglass exterior. And if not that, the aluminum exterior is still an excellent way to go. It reduces your exterior maintenance, but the overall performance, I mean, you know, a vinyl product is going to expand and contract markedly with the change in temperature. And that's going to really, over the long haul, diminish the performance of that window for energy conservation. And then you've also got to be concerned about UV damage, too. So there are a lot of problems with plastic. So that may be part of it.
Might be part of it. Larry, thank you very much for calling. Good luck to you. Mary in Elkader, Iowa is up next. Mary, hi.
Hi. I live in a 1911 concrete block home, two-story, and recently went through the flood. So that also gave me the opportunity, after we pulled everything out, I'm down to the bare wall. What would be the best thing to insulate that's economic? And this is not a living area. It's more my mechanicals. It's the first level, but my mechanicals and garage, and that's what it affected.
So the concrete blocks are the foundation. They're not. You don't go above grade with the concrete blocks.
Oh, yes. Yep, yeah,
all
it's the
way
full
up.
Full two-story concrete block house.
Yeah, and now we've gutted to the interior, and we're putting her back together.
Right.
And a continuous foam board. If we know that we've got great flashing and the home typically stays dry other than the 100-year flood that came by, right? Then we are, I like the foam board right up against the concrete, right? So we want to have a nice monolithic foam board to that concrete wall with all the seams, edges, top, bottom, meticulously airtight, sealed, caulked, etc. Don't rely on tapes up against that concrete, and then we fur out from there.
Okay. Now, what kind of mortar for the cracks and things like that for repair would I use in that age of the house?
Well, when you're down below grade, you're going to need to be using a mortar with some hydraulic qualities. It's got hydrostatic resistance, and I'm not a mason, but we do rely on our masons and our foundation subcontractors to do those sorts of repairs, and I would recommend that you have that professionally done, or consult directly with the supplier about the appropriate patches. There's some products out there on the market. Drylock is one that I'm familiar with that is a hydrostatic cement. What's different about a mortar that has those water-repelling qualities is that when it is applied, it actually expands, and can't tell you the chemical differences, but it's important to use the right type of crack filler when you are going to have possible water pressure. Another thing I'll say is that it's far better, though often cost prohibitive, to do water sealing from the outside, since, of course, the source is on the exterior.
Uh-huh.
If there's ever an opportunity, if there's some reason, let's say a sewer line or water line has to be replaced and some digging is done outside of your home, That's an excellent opportunity to do a little bit of additional digging, at least on one or more walls, and have proper waterproofing done on the outside. And for that matter, insulation applied on the outside of the foundation is also an excellent approach.
Yep.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Debbie in Hurley, Wisconsin. Your turn. Hi, Deb.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We live in a wood frame house built in the late 1930s. In the second story bathroom, we did have it remodeled with drywall. But it, with our long winters, we do have a window, but it's the old window with the heavy storm windows. So, you know, we don't have the option to open it up. So my thought is we need some type of a bathroom vent. And can we go ahead and put a ceiling vent in? It would suck the humidity out of the bathroom, but it would blow it into the attic. So would that potentially be a problem?
Well, yes, it would. I mean, you definitely want to have a bathroom fan, and I'm going to recommend that you invest the extra $50 or so in a high-quality, low-sewn fan. Panasonic is a brand that's well-established as the leader. There are other high-quality, low-sewn, lifetime-lubricated fans that you can acquire. So I recommend that would be the starting point, and then it's absolutely imperative that you vent that or have it vented directly through the roof or through a gable wall to the exterior. Because what's going to happen is that that humidity that will be exhausted year-round in the wintertime, that warm, moist air, if it is simply dumped into your attic, will land on the cold roof rafters and the cold roof sheathing that is up there in the attic.
And All right. It
will condense.
All right.
And when it condenses, it will potentially mold, or I've seen algae blooms. I've seen all sorts of crazy things up in, you know, mushrooms growing up in attics. There are all sorts of horrible things that can happen when you're dumping that humidity up into the attic. So you're better off. I mean, you really do need the fan, and it has to vent to the outside. If you had a choice between dumping humidity into your attic or not having any fan at all, I think I would almost opt for not having the fan at all. But I would say put in the fan and have it properly vented.
How about vented outside the wall, the outside wall?
Yep, absolutely. That they have some great products for sidewall venting of fans as well. So you'll be able to find those products.
All right.
Maybe not directly at a big box store, but hardware store. Again, Panasonic or Braun, two quality manufacturers.
May I ask one more question?
Sure.
In the basement, it's the old basement, but when we painted it with, waterproof paint and wall paint, but it's bubbling up, and the paint is falling off, and it's crumbly, and it's pretty nasty looking. Wondering about that.
How long ago did you apply the paint?
Oh, well, we had to reapply. When we first moved in 8 years ago, we painted with a few years, and then it started to bubble, and then, you know, then it fell off, kind of fell, started peeling off, and it did see black, icky, moldy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it sounds like it's a fairly common situation. There's a lot of moisture moving through those foundation walls, and the problems with some of these paints is that they actually create a vapor barrier. They don't allow that moisture to pass through, and it will bubble and flake, and it will do the things that you are describing. I believe there are some cement-based products out there now that help to hold back the bulk water, but are also partially vapor permeable. We have some subcontractors that apply these products for us, and I'm not an expert on the particular material, but there are some options out there. But again, proper preparation of the surface is another important thing, and it could be that you're going to need to completely strip down that wall. It could be that there were just some residues and other things on there that are causing it to fail.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Dave in West Dallas, we turn to you now. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I have a concrete block house. It's a Cape Cod, built in 1941. Up to the second floor, it's concrete block, and then frame up and above that. And the walls in the home are like a 1x4 furring strip, and then the drywall and plaster put over it. It creates between the drywall and the concrete block. Now, in the wintertime, my exterior walls are very cold. I'm assuming that the crawl spaces on either side of the upper floor, that I'm getting cold air coming out of the attic running down that cavity between the concrete block and the drywall. And I'm wondering, when I go up there, I plan to re-insulate this fall, if I block off that with a vapor barrier, am I going to have condensation issues between the concrete block and the drywall?
Good question. Blocking off that space and air sealing that, right now, you just have a 1-inch or 3/4-inch space between the sheetrock and the surface of the concrete, and a lot of heat is flowing into through that sheetrock into the concrete or exterior, and it's staying cold. I think that you probably could block that off up top there, if that's where the cold attic air is falling down in that spot. Will you get condensation back there? I don't think that you will. I think it's going to stay warm because the whole house is actually heating that space up back behind the sheetrock. So I think that you're good to go. You'd be able to seal that off at the top.
Yeah, I bought the house in 1980, and I went up in the attic at that time and added some about 6 inches of fiberglass over the top of the rock wall that was in there. And this fall, I intend to go up there and do a systematic re-insulation. I'd like to use a fiberglass insulation that I've seen used. It comes completely sheathed in plastic, all four sides. Use that in that slanted area of the roof where the only space I have is between the ceiling and the roof, yep. And kind of wrap that whole thing in that.
Well, first do the air sealing work independent of laying that fiberglass bat down, even though it has plastic on it. So you need to.
Oh, yeah, I intend to.
Yep. And we're not so concerned about the vapor barrier at that point. We just want to plug that hole and make it airtight, and that's going to stop moisture movement.
All right.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We are talking home renovation and repair issues today with John Viner of Building Services and Consultant of Mount Horeb, Wisconsin, and Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. It's a full-service residential remodeling company specializing in sustainable design and historic renovations. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation and repair issues today with John Viner of Building Services and Consultant, Mount Horeb, and Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. Larry Mueller here, really glad to have you listening in as we talk those home renovation and repair issues. You know, talking about buildings and construction, I took a look online again at the Peninsula Players Theater in Door County, and what a beautiful new theater they have there. And we'll be broadcasting from there on July 24th. In case you didn't hear, we'll be doing our live show from 11 to 12:30. And you are invited to come. I tell you what, it doesn't cost anything to show up. And we'll be there. Come a little early and ask some questions if you like and chat. We'd love to have that as well. Afterwards, we'll be enjoying a fish boil. So we're looking forward to the afterglow as well. That's Thursday, July 24th. And if you're wondering if you're in the Oshkosh or the Appleton or the Green Bay areas, we are hosting a shuttle bus with pickups in Oshkosh and Appleton and Green Bay. And to get on board to that, for tickets and so forth, you can call this number. It's 920-465-2502. It's 920-465-2502. And I think you can also go online to wpr.org/Door County and get the information from there as well. But tell you what, it's going to be a lot of fun, and we've got lots of room, and I hope you can make it. Again, the number is 920-465-2502 if you want to get on board that shuttle bus and ride with some other Wisconsin Public Radio people from Oshkosh, Appleton, and Green Bay areas. Well, lots of callers online, and Steve in Kewaunee is up next. So let's go to Steve. Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for the show.
Sure.
Question about restoration. I've got an old house with a hole in the wall, and it's plastered and on metal lath for the top half, and the bottom half is bricks. And I'd like to know where I could get the recipe for the brown coat or scratch coat to use to repair this.
All right. Mm. What do you think, Chad?
Well, I would consult with plaster specialists that we work with here in the Madison area, and I think you're going to have to give your contact information in here to the studio, and I can get that information to you. I'm blanking on the name right now.
Yeah, but most people just want to put a piece of plaster board over the top of it or gypsum board, and it's
no to do it.
Up to my standards.
Sure. And, of course, that can be done, as we all know, but it is also possible to restore the plaster. So, but we would, there is one person in particular in the Madison area that we utilize, and he's a true old-school plaster specialist.
They're really hard to find.
Yes, they are.
Tell you what, I'll put you on hold and give Jim Packard your information, and then we'll go from there.
Well, I appreciate that.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. Gene in Appleton is up next. Hi, Gene.
Yeah, hi, Larry, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a rather complicated question about attic insulation and ventilation. Our house has a lot of insulation in the attic. I'm sure it's up to R19 put in by the previous owners. It stays cool all day inside, but the temperature starts to rise inside the house late in the afternoon and continues to do so all evening. And I think I know part of the problem, at least, and that is that we have a wide soffit that has vents in it, like these 16-inch vents periodically around the base of it. And when they added the insulation, they didn't put these chute things that let the air go up past it. So that the insulation, because of the low-pitched roof, is very close to the roof around where the walls and the soffit are. And also, when our house was last re-roofed, they put in ridge vents, which I don't think do very much because we don't have a trussed roof. And we also have three rectangular gable vents, which are about 15 by 24 inches, screened and probably clogged with cotton from poplar trees, cottonwood trees. And I was told that I thought of putting in a gable vent to suck some of this hot air out of the roof, and they said, well, no, it'll just suck it from the roof vent. So is there any way that you can put in these channels that take the air from the soffit vents up past the insulation from the outside, like take off the multiple vents and shove them in? Because I don't think we're getting enough air circulation up there.
Well, you've got a common problem, and while it's fairly well known how to fix it, depending on the home itself, it can be quite challenging sometimes. I mean, it sounds like you've got a classic situation where the attic might not be ventilating as well as it should, and there clearly is not a good thermal separation from that hot space and your home, which explains why once the heat builds up during the afternoon and into the evening, it continues to fall down into your home and make things less comfortable. So I would say doing some really good air sealing is probably going to be the most important thing that will help your situation, because that hot air is getting into your home, which is why it's causing a problem. The hot air, it sounds like you probably have adequate vents up in the attic to dissipate the heat for the purposes of maintaining the longevity of the home. And that's, we really ventilate an attic so that we can deal with both moisture and heat up in that enclosed space. But it should not be adversely affecting the temperature and comfort in your home as it's doing. Putting in those chutes is sometimes easier said than done. The other unintended consequence of putting in those chutes, which may not solve your problem, we would have to look at it really to tell you that, but putting in those chutes diminishes the R value of the insulation right over top of your exterior wall. And so while having good continuous ventilation can be a good thing with proper air sealing and insulation, it also is a trade-off often in a home like yours. So, John, you might want to add to that.
Yeah, you mentioned good insulation in the attic and then mentioned about an R19 insulating value. So that's, you know, R19 is half the acceptable level of today's minimum code levels, right?
I think I meant to say R38.
38 or so. Yeah. Okay, so that would be better. That's getting up to the minimum accepted levels. And we are installers all the time. I know it gets tight in some of those areas, but they can put vent chutes in often from the attic space. It isn't always easy, as Chad alluded to. So if the insulation is adequate, then we're going after the air sealing aspect of it to prevent that heat dissipating or flowing into the house, etc. Ensuring just getting sitting up in that attic with the hatch closed and it's really dark, and understanding and seeing if you see daylight down at the eaves to look for whether there is clear and unobstructive path for that outdoor air to come in that soffit. Is one way to help assess what it's like down there, and whether maybe a professional insulating contractor or, again, a home performance consultant is an excellent way to go to have that professional make these design decisions based on your site, based on your home, rather than broad sweeping a solution here. Getting somebody out there to take a look is best.
Yeah, may I ask something else? I was told also, and I think I meant to say R38 for the attic.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it is R38. But I was told also that putting in that roof vent and having the soffit vents, we really should have closed off the gable vents. Is that true? Because that's one insulating person told me that.
Mm-hmm. That is an approach, especially if we know the soffit vents are installed properly with those vent chutes, and that's probably the ideal system, is having those soffits working really well and the ridge vent working really well. That's an excellent passive ventilation system. It's hard to say, not knowing if the soffits are truly working, whether we should have got rid of them in the first place or not, right?
Yeah.
I think there may be other things going on than attic ventilation, in addition to attic ventilation, potentially, and that's the air sealing opportunities that really can only be diagnosed with somebody with a blower door, which is a large fan that we set in the doorway of the home, depressurize the house, and it quickly identifies where those leaks are.
Yeah. How do you get a person like that, by the way, John?
A website you can go to is focusonenergy.com, and you can click on residential programs or residential tab, home improvement. then you can search. There'll be a place to search for consultants based on your county. So it's very easy to access. There's a very nice video there that you can watch that actually goes through the process that these home performance consultants are going to do within the home. So very informative and easy to search for consultants in your area.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, I tell you what, we got lots more callers here online. How effective is, I want to go back to waterproofing for a minute, just quickly on waterproofing a basement. How effective is waterproofing in stopping leaking and seeping in a basement? Someone else wondered about that.
Well, again, a lot of times when we talk about waterproofing a basement after the fact, we're talking about applying some sort of a coating on the interior. And that's really like, you know, putting your finger in a crack in a dam on the, you know, on the wrong side of the dam.
Needs to go on the other side.
That's right. If we can, you know, good water control always addresses the source. So, for example, we want to keep water out of our homes from the roof right on down the exterior walls and onto the exterior of the foundation.
We can talk some more about that and, of course, answer your questions as well on home renovation and repair as we visit with John Viner and Chad Spade here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Home renovation and repair issues on our mind on this edition of Conversations with Larry Mueller. Larry Mueller here with my guest, John Viner of Building Services and Consultant, Mount Horeb, Wisconsin. Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, and really pleased to have these guys back. They come by every so often to talk with us, and you can join in at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Dale is up here from Eau Claire with a question. Hi, Dale.
Hi. We have a stove vent, a vento hood from the early 70s that we built into the house. It's vented out through the roof, but recently it doesn't seem to be doing a whole lot, and we're wondering whether might be something to have service on or whether something like that goes bad after a number of years and more up-to-date model should be put in or...
So
any
this,
ideas?
This is just a kitchen range hood over your stove and oven?
Yes.
Okay, and just doesn't seem to be pulling as much as it should, huh?
Doesn't seem to do much of anything.
Yeah, sometimes the termination, it has a flapper out there that can get stuck or warped or damaged. Sometimes that can obstruct flow. Sometimes the motor can just go bad, I suppose, but often it starts making a lot of noise in those cases and gives you a little bit of a clue. Certainly it's important. Is it a gas range?
Electric.
Yeah, so it's electric. Okay, so we're primarily concerned with, obviously, moisture and odors as we cook versus a natural gas stove or oven. We have that carbon monoxide and flue products to address. Having it serviced, having it looked at is the way to go. Certainly it's a good thing to have, and we want to make sure it's operating properly.
Yeah.
Yeah, if the sound hasn't changed, it's probably an obstruction to the path of the vent.
Yeah.
That's what I would guess.
All right. Good luck, Dale. Thank you. Mike in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Mike.
Hi. My main question is concerning a house built the turn of the last century, 1903, somewhere in there. And it's got a stone foundation up until about ground level, and then on the exterior, it's brick-faced. Until you get up to the actual sill of the house itself. And, you know, the thing is, by accident of geography, I guess, appears to be that it's never leaked and it's structurally sound. There's no indication I have that there's any issues with the foundation itself. But it's frighteningly cold in the wintertime. And we're trying to figure out what we can do on there to insulate down there, but with this, it's a very, I don't want to say rough, but you know, it's an uneven surface because of the stone, and it does have a concrete floor, and it's bone dry. Never, ever, ever, even under the worst rain events, have seen any water seepage of any kind. But it's just trying to figure out, you know, your earlier in the call you talked about the, doing styrofoam and things like that. But obviously with that kind of a foundation, it's more difficult.
Sure.
And trying to figure out an approach. And then just one comment on photovoltaic solar. It is only DC. That's how it works. There is no AC options. You have to add a sine wave inverter after solar photovoltaics. It's just the science of it.
Yep, that's right. I think some of them had that inverter built in, or they had a means right at the panel to convert it. It was my leaning
there.
Yeah,
but just for that caller, he seemed to think that there was an AC version, and there isn't. It's
no,
DC.
It's right. DC. No,
that's a good point. Well, as to your foundation and how to insulate it, what I would recommend would be, given its unevenness, and we've done this for a number of clients, we have had the spray-on urethane foam insulation applied directly to that foundation. And I don't hesitate to do it when, as you were saying, you have a very dry foundation, very, very dry basement. We do always have to be concerned about bulk water getting in, and if there isn't an opportunity to waterproof, now the one thing I will say is the spray-on insulation actually is not damaged by water flowing into it, but that spray-on insulation will give a path for the water to go other places. Spray-on insulation has the added important quality of being vapor permeable. So the water that is in that foundation, or the moisture, I should say, not the water, because of course when we say we have a dry basement, that doesn't mean we don't have a damp basement. So there's probably moisture coming into that basement. It would be very unusual if there weren't. The moisture will be able to pass through that insulation, but heat will be very effectively diminished in its transfer. So
yeah,
I would recommend that.
I won't say that it's not damp, but it is surprisingly, for a house that old, there's no musty smell, or it doesn't feel damp. But now you're saying open cell then basically would be the route to go, and not the closed cell.
Yeah, I guess I disagree. I think that the closed cell, the non-permeable polyurethane foam is the way to go, is the closed cell, not the open cell, as I think Chad was referring to, of permeability of that spray foam. We'd rather the closed cell is non-permeable, and that's the product that would be of my choice.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and then I'll flip a coin on that.
Chad, and then, of course, you have to protect that foam. So once you commit to that, you got to have that fire rating over it, and you've got to fur it out and sheetrock it and cover it up. So you would go to that extent if you're making the basement area livable, right? If you're going to spend time down there, that's often when you would go to that expense, because you do need to finish the space.
Yeah. Now, on that, when you guys are talking about furring it out, were you really saying that you would put up a false wall anchored to the floor joist and the concrete floor, or are you suggesting that you tie into the foundation itself?
To the concrete floor and the floor joists above, and you would hold that wall back, maybe have it all framed up before you spray foamed, and then you spray foam behind it all the way around it.
Yep.
And then sheetrock.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so spray a layer and then build your walls, and then spray it, drywall, etc.
Yep.
All right, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mike, for calling. Tom in Mequon, your turn now. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Larry. I have a question in that I'm wondering if you can have a house that's too tight, and if there's a way to check that, to keep out disease and stuff like that.
Yep. So a house, often we strive for a very tight home in the industry, in the energy efficiency and building performance industry. We want to get everything right so that we can have that tight house. Now, as we go into an existing structure, there's things that limit us from making the home tight. And if we don't get rid of those barriers than there are we have to stop at some point. And those barriers are, you know, open hearth fireplaces or water heaters, furnaces, and boilers that vent into a vertical chimney. They need some amount of air to draft appropriately. So there's a safety from carbon monoxide that we're concerned with. And then there's durability and health issues related to moisture buildup within the home. So if we bring that 100 perennials in over winter in our basement and we're keeping things water, we're putting a lot of moisture in our house, and darn it, we just can't go all out and make that house really tight and then have a mediocre ventilation system or dehumidification system. We're going to have problems, no question about it. We measure the house tightness with a blower door test, and we've mentioned this before, and often the air tightness, the qualities of the air tightness of the building trumps insulating the building. It's very important to understand where you sit and where you can take that house from, again, air tightness standpoint. The blower door tests are done by building performance consultants throughout the state, and you can find those at focusonenergy.com.
Mm-hmm. And so I'll add to that to put another spin on John's answer, it's not really possible to over-insulate or to have a house that is constructed too tight. But then if the ventilation systems aren't there, that has to be a part of the equation as well. The old-fashioned home was a sieve. It was very leaky. In fact, the walls were hollow over 100 years ago, and air was flowing all through and around that structure, and we didn't have any problems with air quality, but we also had no good way to heat or cool the home, short of expending a lot of resources. And now that fuel costs are much higher and we have concerns about environmental degradation from the way we heat and cool our homes, obviously we want to be more attentive to that. And so we've pushed in a totally opposite direction. But it's really, not only has it revolutionized the way we build houses and think of houses, but it's created some new problems, some unintended consequences. It's great that we can heat and cool for a lot less money, and we can have much less of an impact on the earth in doing so. But then the downside is we have to be able to breathe in our homes. We are humans. We do require oxygen, and in fact, not just oxygen, but good quality air. And so that's a part of the equation now. And that's really the missing link in a lot of problems that we have with modern buildings.
And that's where those heat recovery units, I assume, come into play or can help.
Yeah, that's the high-tech solution to that problem, certainly.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for calling. Stacy in Caledonia, Minnesota, it is your turn. Hi, Stacy.
Hi. I have a question about my shower. A couple weeks ago, I noticed some hairline cracks, and they're sort of branching out.
From?
In the grout?
No, it's actually all-in-one shower surround, and so the finish is crackling a little bit, and I don't know what it looks kind of plasticky. It's mm-hmm. kind of a typical shower.
Yeah, it's probably an acrylic or a fiberglass wall.
Yeah, now that you say that, I think it's fiberglass.
Yeah, well, this is something that you've noticed. You know it wasn't there a few months ago, or at least you're pretty confident it wasn't.
I'm pretty confident it
wasn't.
Yeah,
okay. Well, of course, not seeing it, I'm not sure whether this is just an aesthetic blemish. I mean, it could be that something happened to impact that shower. You know, someone in the family put an elbow into it or something. Is it at a level where you could explain it that way, or is it?
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly possible.
Okay. So it could just be that it's, you know, suffered an impact and now it's going to be a little bit less attractive than it used to be. It probably is not a full crack in the surface where water is actually getting back behind it, though that would be what I would be concerned about. I'd keep an eye on it. It could be that at some point, you know, if it becomes so hideous you can't stand it any longer, you may have to look at replacing it. But some of those products can be repaired. And again, not knowing exactly what it is, that is something, though, that you could look into, is finding someone that would be able to come and repair that wall as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so just somebody that does bathtubs and showers?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Pat in Appleton, on to you.
Hi. I have a question on, it's a double-sided aluminum bubble wrap type thing that they sell, Reflexic insulation. Could that be put, stapled to the rafters, or would it make it too hot against the shingles?
It's designed to go up, I think, on the rafters. I'm not an advocate of the foil bubble wrap here in Wisconsin. I guess the application would be you're trying to keep your attic cooler, trying to increase comfort in your upper level in the summertime. I guess it's not something that I would recommend to do. I'm going to stick with the tradition here and just insulate and air seal that attic space and make sure it's well vented. Don't try to purchase a product such as the foil wrap here to increase performance of your building. I don't think you're going to get a whole lot of gains from that installation. You're certainly going to trample the insulation that's there and then have to re-insulate anyway.
At this point, there is no insulation. It's not finished at all.
Oh, is it
an open attic?
Okay, so it's a walk-up attic on an existing home then?
Yes.
Okay, so you have the ability to do that. I still don't think it's going to be a worthwhile product. It's a product that has worked well down south in hot, humid climates. There's a longer application. They have a longer cooling season than we do here in Wisconsin, so they do get some economic and benefits from it. I haven't seen anybody use it successfully here in Wisconsin.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Charles in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Charles.
Hello, Larry. I'm a guy from the old Hope School, Hope 4-H.
Wow.
Remember Drottnings from across the street?
Of course.
Anyway, I have a 1960s colonial two-story with slanted ceilings. The ceilings slant to the edge of the house, you know, for about 3 feet,
mm-hmm.
which means that there isn't much insulating space up in there. Between the ceiling and the roof, just the width of the rafter. And I've been recommended to have dense pack cellulose blown in there, you know, to it's very prone to ice damming along the you know, from the soffit in.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just wondering what your guests or your experts' opinion on that were.
Okay.
That's certainly a common strategy, is to carefully and effectively dense pack cellulose insulation in there at a very high density, which stops most air movement within that cavity, and we get a fair insulating value there. The next step up from that is at the time a roof was replaced, where we're able to get, again, a closed cell foam into that space so that we get a good 3 inches in R21 versus an R13 with the cellulose insulation. Low-income weatherization programs throughout the state of Wisconsin use dense-pack cellulose on many of the homes that they use. It's a very common technique. It's well tried and true. I recommend it quite frequently for a lot of my customers, so I'm certainly an advocate there. Have you had a lot of ice dams at all this winter? You said you did, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, last winter was pretty bad, and this particular style of house, as I go around Madison, seems to be very prone to that.
Yeah,
you know, with the way the ceiling sort of juts into the roof space.
Right. So those addressing the slopes, and those slopes go out to the exterior wall then?
Yeah. They, you know, start right at the wall, and for about 3 feet, you just have the width of the rafter.
Yep, and there's really no overhang on that, no venting out there designed at this point.
The overhang is only about a foot or 10 inches, something like that.
Small, yeah. So dense pack cellulose is a fine way to go. If you're not re-roofing, that's the step to take.
Yeah, right. And it won't reduce the life of the shingles that much, is what I'm told, which is surprising.
Yeah, they've had a number of studies on that. There is some degradation there. So I guess even as they've monitored the temperature of those roof shingles, it's raised it a couple degrees. Just really that was it under these circumstances, and there may have been some single-digit percent degradation in the shingles over its life, whether it was 4 or 5% is what I've heard.
Okay.
Well, that's very encouraging. Thank you very much.
Then, Charles, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Good to hear your voice again. And Greg in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Greg.
How you doing?
Good.
But I've got two separate questions. One I'll try to ramble off fairly quick, and the other one I'd like you to address a little harder maybe. The first one is I bought an exhaust fan for an attic, an exhaust vent fan, thermostat controlled. And my question is, are those pretty effective? And then secondly, is on that subject, is the vent that I have on the thing, it's got the slits already in it. It's not a gable vent that'll open and close motorized. Is that adequate to put that, just leave that kind of a vent with the slits that are already in it?
So, this is the vent that you had before you mounted your attic fan in?
I don't have an attic fan. I'm looking to mount the attic fan, the exhaust fan, behind in the attic, obviously behind the vent that's in the wall.
Okay. As long as the opening matches closely the fan size, I think you're good for that exhaust opening,
okay.
Right? So now we have to look at the intake. Where's the fan going to pull its air from? And we want it, obviously, from the exterior of the attic outside. Mm-hmm. Air and not from the house. Certainly an attic exhaust fan, I've have customers give me positive feedback. It's made their second story cooler, and that's great. So I know we can get some benefit from it. Again, we want the intake not to be from the house, so that requires air sealing. Anytime I would install an attic fan, I'd want a blower door test and identify all those darn holes between my house and the attic and make sure there were plugs so I'm not sucking the condition air that I just paid, prices, a good dollar for, to heat up into the attic space. And then I have the required amount of intake vent area within my attic so it can pull air from the exterior. So the manufacturer of those fans should have some specifications on the net free area, the net square inches of vent area required.
Okay. Well, my bigger concern then is I have a lot of condensation on my windows in the winter, and it's about a 14-year-old home. It's insulated, up to code and everything like that. So what's causing it? What can I do?
How many family members do you have?
Excuse me?
How many family members and pets do you have?
No, we can't get rid of those things.
Two adults, two kids, and a dog.
All right. Well, I'm just wondering about the amount of moisture generated there by everybody. But, Chad, what do you think?
Well, you're probably going to need to bring some fresh air into the house in a controlled manner to help bring down that humidity level. What's going on in the wintertime is that we heat up that air, and it has a lot more carrying capacity. We often even humidify the air. I don't know. Do you have a humidifier?
No.
Okay. Well, that's good. So you've got a lot of natural occurring humidity, and of course, just from having the people, the occupants in the house. And so by bringing in some cool air from the outside in a controlled way, often we call that makeup air. We bring it in. The most cost-effective way to do it is with a 6-inch duct with a barometric damper on it, which basically allows the air to flow in whenever the house goes under negative pressure. And a house like yours, 14 years old, probably is fairly tight, which means that whenever you turn on an exhaust fan or you're running the dryer, you're mechanically removing air from the home, but you need a way for fresh air to come back in. And that outside air is going to have lower humidity.
And with that, we have to conclude. I wish we had more time. John and Chad, thank you so much. We'll look forward to your next visit.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eric.
To be here.
John Viner of Building Services and Consultant, Mount Horeb, Wisconsin. Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, our guests. And thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.